All right, hello everyone, and welcome to Gentle Healing Year 3. Joanne, I loved it when you came on. You were in outer space. That was pretty cool. So I've actually collected a lot this week. I have quite a bit to share. Probably will not get through all of it, but that makes up for last week when I didn't have enough to fill the hour. Before I get started, does anyone else have something they would like to share? Okay, Ron.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, we had a, it's been an interesting day. Let's see, my daughter fell rock climbing and hurt her ankle. We thought she'd broken it, but didn't. So we had to cancel our trip to Vancouver for next week. Got struck by lightning here at the house. A lot of electronics are out, so I'm trying to patch it together with the iPad and other things. So you see my hands moving around trying to figure out how to use my iPad screen. That's what's going on. But it's all good. It's all good, which is fantastic. It's so so wonderful to be in that kind of space. And I think this community has a lot to do with that. I just wanted to plug the retreat house and the retreat. I just got back from one last week, and we hiked every day moderately, not heavily like the one coming up in September, and then meditated in the morning. And this is my second retreat, and both of them had, you know, I wouldn't use the word major breakthroughs, but it's not a matter of major breakthroughs. It's kind of the shifting of the sail. If I'm not a big sailor, but I've been on sailboats enough that you know, you can just be off the breeze with the sails and just be kind of fluttering in the wind, and you just minor adjustments make a huge difference. And when you really adjust it right, then you catch that wind and you're really going. And I have to say that for both those retreats, I came away with things that impacted me that way. And it's not just the setting and the care that's taken, and Cheryl does such a great job in taking care of us while we're there, but just the I think being together too, there's something about that is pretty special. So for those of you who haven't tried it out, it's been very beneficial for me. So that's all I want to say. Just passing the mic.
Thank you, Ron. And I will tell on Ron, he actually attended the same retreat twice on purpose. He attended the natural meditation retreat in February and then came back for the nature and natural meditation, which is the same retreat, except that we are outside instead of inside in July. And at one point in the retreat, he asked me, he said, "Are these the same quotes we contemplated in February?" And the answer was yes.
So, you know, Regina, obviously I'm not sure whether that is just because other things are unlayering or because of, you know, what happens naturally with the human body as you age. So I'm not sure which one that is.
Yeah, I think as you change, the quotes change, you know. Yeah. I think that's what happens. So,
well, that's being very kind. I would like to think it's 100% that. I will agree
with you on that. I think it is, because you were very involved in February too. So, but the point is, you know, some of these retreats, you can actually attend the same retreat again and still get value out of it, right? So, yeah, thank you, Ron, for sharing. All right. So, like I said, I have a long list of things. I was really surprised how much I collected this week, but I remember when I went through step three, I really loved it. So that's probably not surprising. Let's start with 561. Can you guys believe you're up to 561 already? That's like, you know, nearly halfway through the book. Not quite, but you're getting there. 561 says, "Realizing the self is the only useful and worthy activity in this life. So keep the body in good repair till that goal is achieved. Afterwards, the self will take care of everything and you won't have to worry about anything anymore. In fact, you won't be able to, because the mind that previously did the worrying, the choosing, and the discriminating will no longer be there. In that state, you won't need it and you won't miss it." So what I thought we would talk about is, you know, this talks about caring for the body, but it kind of brought to mind just all practical matters in life. And my question is, how do we discriminate with wisdom regarding the practical matters in life when the ego is still in place. You know, so what's the difference between managing life with wisdom and being engaged in the ego? How can we know that we're being practical with wisdom? So I'm just waiting to see what y'all have to share on that.
Are we supposed to leave the worry about the practical, which is what I think I should and shouldn't do, and thinking ahead to the moment? I don't quite do this yet, but at least that's what I imagine that to be, is so trusting the moment that you're guided by that invisible hand to take care of all the practical things. That is at least the way I'm thinking of it now.
Yeah, thank you. In fact, I want to say to Shauna, I am not a liar. And I'll tell you why I said that, Shauna. Last week I told Shauna, and this is still true, I am not a liar. Last week I told Shauna that I am not going to plan the releasing the I am bad belief retreat. But yesterday, while I was in meditation and contemplation, day one just started coming. So I grabbed the paper and started typing it, and then I was done. Today, during meditation and contemplation, day two started coming, so I grabbed the keyboard and typed it up. But that's the reason I said I'm not a liar, is because I'm still not planning, right? I didn't know that I would show up to the retreat with anything. I was perfectly willing to walk in with absolutely nothing, because I knew that whatever I needed would show up then. Like, I have no fear about that anymore. But the fact that it's coming now, and that I'm typing stuff up, and now I know I'm going to have some handouts that I'm going to bring for people. I didn't know that before. You know, this is perfect too. And you're right. It's happening with wisdom. It's not happening with my planning, worrying mind, right? So it has a different feel about it, right? It has the feel that it's kind of being given, rather than I'm figuring it out and I'm thinking about it and I'm, you know, trying to put together a good workshop, right? None of that is there. What else do you have to say? And for those of you who have just joined us, we're looking at how to manage the practical things in life with wisdom, instead of being engaged in the ego when the ego is still present. Oh, wait, Jay, same guy.
I wanted to throw in something about planning the homilies for the sermons I've given in the sanctuary. I first started out planning when I first started doing it, and then I decided to not plan it. But what I later realized is that was still a thought from the mind. What I need to do is just be open to however it may come about. And that's what I finally wound up doing, is sometimes I would receive ahead of time different types of instructions. That was what I finally realized, is you can't set a rule as to how you should do it, because that's just a trick for the mind to stay involved. You got to give up even how it could come about. Like, maybe I am guided to open a book, or maybe I am guided to do this or that differently, or whatever. The point is that it's coming from inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a brainy energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine if I had some thought, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not supposed to type anything up, and all this stuff is trying to come, you know. So, yeah, thank you, Jay. What other ways can we pay attention and see if we're managing with clarity or wisdom instead of engaging the ego? Okay, George.
So the one thing that I do frequently is as I see the ego coming up, and whatever the issue is, it often triggers an awareness to just watch it and see what transpires. So nothing may change, but at least I'm aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I know Cheryl, right, it seems to flow naturally versus feeling a need to create something. I'll tell you guys something that I do. Some of you guys know this already, but I do like to take care of the body, which is what this quote was about. And in spite of, you know, the shape that I'm in, I know I look like I'm in good shape, and I am in good shape. But in spite of that, this body by itself seems to have a desire to want to gain weight. And it gains weight very, very quickly, if not managed very carefully. And so what I do, because I find it easy, is I have this app called Lose It, where I type in, you know, what I'm, I don't know if you can see that, I type in what I'm eating during the day, and it keeps track on top, and it tells me how many more calories I have. If we look at last week, for example, you'll notice last week's, I think we celebrated my birthday two nights in a row. By the way, it's not even my birthday yet. But as a result, if you look at last week, I don't know if you guys can read this, but it says last week I was 1,228 calories over my budget for the week. And I gained a pound. And so this week, what I have is a light desire. And light, I think, is what's important about this. I have a light desire to manage this, watch this, so that I can lose that pound. You know, it'll probably take me 2 weeks to lose a pound. That's the way it tends to work. But how do I know that when I'm using this app and I'm typing in what I'm eating, how do I know whether I'm doing this with ego or not? I mean, this isn't much different than managing a checkbook, right? You know, if you keep your balance, you subtract your checks out. You pay attention to the amount of money you have in your checking account so you're not overdrawn. Paying attention to the number of calories so you don't eat too much. How do I know whether I'm managing my checkbook or managing my calories with ego or not? Yes, Jay.
You're looking at the reason why you're doing it. Is it to keep your body healthy so you can awaken and have a vehicle in which to operate?
Well, that's really honorable, but I would say I'm keeping my body healthy so I can hike. But thank you for honoring me so much.
Well, then you're just doing it with ego, Regina. Gosh, what's your problem?
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
Is there judgment involved? Is there conflict? Is there inner turmoil when you look at the numbers and they don't add up the way you want them to add up?
Yes, absolutely. It's all about that inner feeling, right? You know, like I can look at last week and I can see that last week I was, 1,200 over? And I can decide that this week I want to go ahead and reverse that. But, you know, what if something comes up? Like what if, you know, Ron and Jasmine take me out to dinner and I can't, you know? You know, how am I able to accept what is as I'm using this app to continue to manage, you know? And for me, this is just a tool. And it's just like the checkbook. Once upon a time, when I first left my job and I had a lot of fear, every single time I paid a bill and I was subtracting out that checkbook, all this fear came up and all this worry came up, you know? Now I just, you know, subtract the bills. When I get paid, I add that back in and I'm just keeping a checkbook, right? It's just a practical matter to make sure I don't get overdrawn. This is just a practical matter to keep a body that genuinely, I mean, I'm not making this up, wants to gain weight very quickly, you know, within some reasonable limits, right? And I don't have any of those silly goals like some people do, like getting back down to my high school weight or anything like that. I just want to remain, you know, healthy, you know, and able to hike or awaken, as Jay says. But, you know, there's lots of things, there's lots of tools in this life, and there's lots of things that we manage in day-to-day life. But really what you want to do to see if you're just managing the practicalities that come in front of you that make sense for your life, or whether you're all engaged with ego, is pay attention. Are you worrying? Are you judging? You know, are you strongly desiring something that isn't present, right? Or are you just managing the day-to-day practicalities? I mean, when he says, keep the body in good repair till that goal, meaning awakening, till that goal is achieved, he knows that if you're going to keep the body in good repair, there are some things you have to do. Like I remember one sage who apparently loves swimming recommended swimming a mile every morning. you know, Ramana Maharshi walked 8 miles every day around Arunachala and asked everyone to walk with him. And so in a way, these are types of management. right? I'm going to swim a mile every day, or I'm going to walk 8 miles every day. But again, is there all this thought that, is there unworthiness attached to the body, for example, or fear attached to the money, right? Or are you just managing the practicalities of life? So watch these things and don't avoid what needs to be done. But just make sure you're doing it with, I call it lightly. Yes, Jay.
So to clarify, using you as an example, for you to use the app wrong, you would be all freaking out inside when you put in your calories, and when you see the number, you'd be, oh God, like that's what you're talking about. Or that would be using it for ego, right? And versus just lightly using it to not invest. Okay.
Well, okay, I see what you're saying. Track. There's no doubt about that. Just like I use my checkbook register to keep track. Because otherwise, I would lose track.
That's interesting, because when I do pay my bills, sometimes I have fear come up. So I'm going to actually look at that now, because now you've brought something up that I didn't realize. So, yeah, I'm gonna look at that.
Yeah. And Cheryl knows there are things I'll say, you know what, I won't eat that. Thanks, but I won't eat that. Because I don't have any interest in gaining weight. I just have zero interest. Somebody said to me last week, you have a lot of willpower. I said, it's not willpower. It's just intelligence. And by intelligence, I meant, I know what will happen if I eat all that stuff and I'm not interested, just not interested. Just like I'm not interested in overdrawing my bank account or I also pay my credit card in full every month. And I am not interested in acquiring debt. I have zero debt. And I've had zero debt for years, and I have zero interest in acquiring debt. I would rather do without something than go into debt. These things are all okay, right? But they need to be managed lightly, the practicalities. So let's look and see what else they have then. That was the first quote I had, because I know a lot of people just don't know how to manage practicalities. So let's look at 565. Now that we talked about food, I'm getting hungry. No, I think it's time for me to eat. It's around dinner time here. Okay, so 565. The happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of the mind, is eternal. It is supreme bliss. Some of you guys commented on this, but some of you didn't seem as sure about it. So let's answer this. What is the second kind of absorption?
I would say just getting absorbed in absorbed in the absolute versus being absorbed in the physical mind body experience. Is that what you're talking about?
You've got it half right, Jay. And this is one very, sometimes in contemplations, there's not a right, most of the time in contemplations, there's not a right answer and a wrong answer. This happens to be one of those few times there's a right answer, which is why I wanted to discuss it, because not everybody got to that. So the second kind of absorption. Yes, Ron.
I took it to be the second awakening, the final awakening.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first absorption would be the awakening to consciousness, or what Nisargadatta calls the I am presence. And so that's already what Bernadette Roberts would call the death of the ego, right? So you've already awakened out of the person that you thought you were into consciousness, unity consciousness. The second kind of absorption is the final destruction of mind, manonasa. That's when you awaken from consciousness to the absolute. Yeah, so I just want to make sure everybody knew what that quote was about. So the happiness obtained through the second kind of absorption, the destruction of the mind, is eternal. It is the supreme bliss. Right? That second absorption. So that was 565. Let's look at 567. When self, our nature of existence consciousness, instead of shining only as the pure consciousness I am, shines mixed with an adjunct as I am man, I am Rama, I am so-and-so, I am this or that, then this mixed consciousness is the ego. This mixed consciousness can rise only by catching hold of a name and form. When we feel, I am man, I am Rama, I am sitting, I am lying, is it not clear that we have mistaken the body for I, and that we have assumed its name and postures as I am this and I am thus? Now, the reason I brought up, I'll go ahead and just tell you why I brought this up. I won't ask mysterious questions to try and get you to figure it out. I brought this up because 565 talks about the second absorption. 567 is actually pointing towards the first absorption. 567 is pointing towards the I am from the I am this. You see that? And then 565 is pointing beyond that to the second absorption. So I just thought, since those quotes are right there side by side, I would point them out. And I think if you don't know about two awakenings, you know, if you don't know that you awaken from I am person to consciousness and then to absolute, these quotes could be very, very confusing. You know, especially since they're just kind of thrown in here in the way they are, just separated quotes. So I just kind of wanted to point these two out because they're side by side. Are there any questions? All right, let's look at the next thing we have collected then. 566. So let's look at 566. Oh, it's right in between these two. temporary. I never know how to say this word. I always cheat and say quiet or quieting in this case. Quiescence, I guess. Temporary quiescence of the mind is temporary quiescence of misery, and permanent destruction of the mind is permanent destruction of misery. That is, the mind itself is misery. Hence, let us find out what is to be done to destroy the mind. All right, I'm going to share my screen. We're going to look at something in my journal. We're actually not looking at my journal entry itself. The journal entry is up here, and it's, you know, it's very simple. Do not be satisfied with a little time of peace during moments of contemplation and meditation. Practice the practices given by wisdom, those that arise when the mind is quiet, and follow that practice into the complete cessation of mind. But that isn't really what I brought you here to show. At some point, for some reason, and I don't know when I did this, I came back and made a reply to my own post, which I don't remember ever doing before. But let's look at this reply. What is this talk of completely destroying mind? Sages like Ramana Maharshi recommend destroying the mind and yet appeared to use the mind themselves. So what does it mean to completely destroy the mind? Through value, meaning, and belief given to mind's thoughts, mind has become an entity of its own, running on power that is given to it unconsciously. This entity appears to be the self, but it is a phantom. I just want to point out again that this is happening, you know, this is a power that's given to the mind unconsciously and that makes the mind appear to be an entity of its own, which of course we think is I. When it is seen how power is unconsciously given to the phantom, a conscious decision can be made to remove that source of power. When the power is removed, the phantom vanishes. Now, the phantom is the mind appearing as an entity. Then the mind is an impotent tool that makes no noise at all unless awake divine intelligence decides to use it for a specific function. In this case, the mind can be used without rebirthing the phantom entity. So there's a difference between the mind as a self and the mind as a tool. Does anybody have any comments or questions about that? If so, just speak up, because I can only see a few of you while I'm sharing the screen.
Hey, Regina, it's Ron. Yeah. It reminds me again of what Locke Kelly was talking about. He uses the term mini, mini-me, unhooking the mini-me. And so it's not destroyed. it fades, it retreats back to its normal decision-making function when called on, but it's in the background and true self is in the foreground now and pretty much has its, the ego is just playing just a normal, what we might call a normal function, maybe for the lack of a better term, where right now it's playing the role of the prima donna.
I think Ramana Maharshi's saying just one little thing slightly different. You mentioned that Locke Kelly says the mini-me retreats to the background.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ramana Maharshi is saying as a me, that is completely destroyed. The mind remains. But the mini, he's saying that you can get to the point where the mini-me doesn't retreat to the background. The idea that mind is me, that connection, right, can be completely destroyed. Not the mind. Like, the mind is still there. You still know what a stop sign is. You still know how to use it to balance the checkbook. But the connection that it's a me, you could call it a connection more, right? That can be destroyed, is what Ramana Maharshi is saying. So we never, ever mistake the mind as me again.
Sure. And I think I just miscommunicated. Locke Kelly says the same thing. He says the mini-me disappears and becomes the functional ego, which has nothing to do with me. Just has to do with decision-making when called upon.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you for sharing that. Does anyone else have anything they want to share? Yeah, let's see what I have here next. Oh, while we're here, we're going to go look at 568 in the RDA journal. Let me look at 568 here in the book first. Oh, it's very short. As to my mind, there is no such thing. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. All right, so here's what I wrote in my journal. There is no mind. This is the strictest sense of truth. But as long as mind appears to be, do not deny it. Instead, be attentive in not believing it, attentive in focusing attention on self, non-mind self. So I think the reason I brought you here was because sometimes when we read these quotes, I don't know about you guys, but like, as to my mind, there is no such thing. There's just this feeling like, yeah, well, it's not true for me. And so I think the reason I brought you here is that, sometimes when the quotes seem not to apply, I ask the question in contemplation, how does this apply to me? Right? How does this quote apply to me? And the way it applies to me is, of course, not to pretend like I don't have a mind. Don't deny that the mind is still present. But this, be attentive and not believing it. Be attentive and focusing attention on self, which of course is the non-mind self. So just in case you have challenges with these types of quotes, I just wanted to introduce that technique of how does this apply to me? Any questions or comments? All right, let me see if I can see. Something's changed here. I'm going to move you guys, I guess. There we go. Okay, I wanted all of us, I'll stop sharing now. I wanted us to look at 569 and 573 and contemplate them together. So they're the top of two pages right next to each other. That makes it easy. So 569, when you believe yourself to be a person, you see persons everywhere. In reality, there are no persons. Only threads of memories and habits. At the moment of realization, the person ceases. Identity remains, but identity is not a person. It is inherent in the reality itself. And then 573, as long as you do not see that it is mere habit, built on memory, prompted by desire, you will think yourself to be a person, living, feeling, thinking, active, passive, pleased, or pained. Question yourself. Ask yourself, is it so? Who am I? What is behind and beyond all this? And soon you will see your mistake. So in both of these quotes, he mentions the person being nothing but memory and habits. In 573, he adds desire to it. So we're talking about the person is nothing but memories and habits and desires. So I just wanted to talk about this. I wanted to see if you guys contemplated this. You think this is true? What came up for you as you looked at these ideas?
Well, yes. as depressing as it was to contemplate that, you know, like everything that we think we are, which is this bundle of memories and habits and desires and conditioning and all that, kind of an inner laugh too, maybe at it, like, okay, well then, you know, it's just a passing wave and you don't need to get all up in arms about it. I guess it had an effect of maybe calming me down a little or just making me realize that the whole thing, you don't need to get worked up over it. My subcontractor, Robert, screwed up again today, and I didn't get upset. I was looking forward to that happening, and I'm like, huh, I didn't get mad. It was like this old pattern in me, like, wasn't there anymore, and it was like part of me was like, wait, aren't you supposed to be upset? But I wasn't. So I'm like adjusting to this. So I think as that falls away, there's a little bit of disorientation, but I let it go. I'm like, okay, you know, let's let it fall away. But yeah, I mean, I certainly intellectually agree with that, but you know, it's, I guess the journey of that, the journey of disidentifying, the journey of letting go of thinking that's me, the journey of taking it more lightly, you know, as you talked about, you know, a lot today about taking it lightly. So those are just some thoughts I have about it, my current process.
Well, let me ask you this, and I don't know why I want to pick on you, Don. I think maybe you contemplated this and somehow I know it. Yeah.
I was going to speak up, but I didn't know if it was proper because, you know, I'm so into Gentle Healing Year One with Reverend Jacqueline Eckert and Connie Poole. But I, when you said that, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I'm going through. So okay. Funny. What has happened recently for me, and I'm still playing with this, so I'm very brand new at this, but a new inquiry came in because as I'm questioning all my thoughts, doing the inquiry, the Byron Katie inquiry, all of a sudden a thought from when I was probably 8 or 9 years old came in, and it was a memory, okay? And then I was like, whoa, wait a minute. All a memory is thought. That's all it is. And so as I questioned the thought, because when you really see that a memory is just a thought, it lets that, something about the word memory is like, oh, it's this thing that's me. But when you break it down and see that it's just a thought, then you can even step forward with a willingness to question it.
Yeah, and I want to stop you for just a second because I want to repeat what you said. She said something about a memory makes you think, oh, that's me. Okay, continue. I just want to make sure everybody heard that because that's really
a word. It's something we think about the word memory. So once I saw, like, oh my God, that is just a thought. So then I was like, okay, let me question it. It's just a thought. It's like all these other thoughts, like the I am bad belief or the I'm not worthy or whatever. Just like I've been questioning all these other thoughts. Why don't I just see what happens? It's almost like an experiment, like I'm a scientist and I'm seeing what's happening when I question this. So I was doing that again today. And the thought is just like an image in my mind, like a light image in my mind. And I'm like, okay. And there's three different ways I ask this question. Who am I? Which doesn't feel powerful for me anymore because I know I'm not a who. So what am I when I don't believe this thought? And then all of a sudden I feel the unreality, like, oh my God, it's just a thought. And then I take it a step further where something about this is really helpful when I ask, how do I behave when I don't believe this thought? And remember, it was a memory. All of a sudden, I feel like a bag of rocks has lifted off me. It literally is like a chain. This memory is a chain. If this is how it feels in me, it feels like a chain in my mind that has linked me and made me feel so solid and so real and like, oh, that's what I am. So as I'm playing with this more and more and more, I'm going all these different thoughts that just randomly pop into my head of memories of the past. I will question them with the same technique that I've done on all the other thoughts. And then that, is it true? Is it absolutely true? And how do I react or behave without that thought? And so many of these thoughts, so many of them, wow. Like the one thought I had of when I got spanked so hard for going on the railroad tracks. Well, all of a sudden, without this thought, this memory, remember, it's just a thought, all of a sudden, my mom's not a monster anymore for beating the crap.
Whoa, did you guys hear that? Did you guys hear that? All of a sudden, my mom's not a monster anymore. Anything else to say? Are you done?
The sweet peace and release that is, because I really like, I play with how the body or inside, what's it feel like without this thought? And all I could say is, it's like a sweet release.
It's, you know, and some other things, I took some other notes that she wrote down. Like she said, she realized that, she says that she realized that memory is a chain in the mind that has linked me and made me feel so solid and real as, oh, that's what I am. Think of memories as just a thought chain in the mind that links you, right? One moment to another moment to another moment, and then says, oh, that's what you are. Right? That's pretty incredible. So that's what these quotes are saying. And of course, Dawn's only looking at memory right now, but the quote also adds habits and desires.
Yes, well, Dawn. As you were speaking, it just came to me, all a habit is an action you've repeated time and time again. But as you learn to question your thoughts and you get that connection, and that's what's so powerful about the work or any inquiry, is you see the connection between your thought and then the behavior that follows. You really can see that behavior, that action, what you did came from the thought. So behavior or habit. Habit came from thought. So that's the same process.
And I think it's great to question habit. And one way I like to question habit is by trying to change them. So let's say that the first thing you do every morning is you go and you get coffee. What if one morning you, I wouldn't brush my teeth before coffee because that's kind of yucky. But, you know, what's something else that you could do before coffee? Make your bed. Right? What if one morning you get up and make your bed and then get coffee? And then what if the next morning you get up and answer one email and then get coffee? And then the next morning you get up and you get coffee first. What if you just start mixing it up a little bit? You might actually find that a little bit of self-identity falls away because there's a little bit of identity in even your habits. I do this, right? So what if you start just mixing it up a little bit, but don't brush your teeth before coffee, okay? That'll ruin your coffee. Or orange juice either. Ruins your orange juice. I don't know, maybe some of you guys already do, but I would always have the coffee first. Yes, Jay.
I think, thank you, Dawn. That was a great description of what you practice and of the practice. For me, with questioning thought, if you want to call it that, I kind of have a different way of describing it, but I'm giving myself permission to do it more often. At times I maybe haven't in the past, like at 2 in the afternoon, or like I've gotten into a new habit, which is looking at thought when I wake up in the morning. Which is, I started that ever since the judge retreat and have kept that going and just find such release, just like Dawn's saying, from any thoughts that come in, or if they've come in and I've started down the track a little bit and a little bit of emotion has come up, I can even at that point choose to question and come right back out of it. And I chuckle to myself how easy it is and how peaceful I feel when I practice it.
And I don't, the cool thing for me is unlinking that from a dedicated spiritual practice time, which I realize has become a spiritual habit. Okay. And so for me to randomize it into just unhabitual times of the day, kind of like what you're talking about, has actually been kind of cool. It's kept me very just sort of present, you know, and it's starting to become more of an ingrained habit, that questioning, more than it has ever before. So I appreciate what you're saying, Regina, a lot.
Okay, so yeah, I just thought we would contemplate a little bit more, and I'll move on, but I'll just say it one more time, that this person is built on memory, habits, and desires. And if we know that, it kind of gives us another way to kind of look at and undo the person. And this is why I think so many spiritual teachings say, don't keep telling your story. You see? Because your story is really just a memory, and what you're doing is securing your identity as a person by telling the story over and over again. So let's see what else we have here that was good. I remember there was a lot of good stuff. That was 569 and 573. So 570, Mark Smith's journal. I talked about this at the retreat last week. Let me share my screen again. And we'll come over here to Mark's journal, 570. Let me read 570 to you. Oh, I think he has it right here. Of what use is the relative view to you? You are able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? Are you afraid of the absolute? And here's what Mark's inner wisdom said. Wow. This quote really cuts to the chase. The understanding of relative versus absolute standpoints has been one you've thought was extremely important ever since you learned that terminology from the functionality in the earliest versions of electronic spreadsheets. It's time for you now to apply this knowledge to the viewpoints available to you in everyday life. Mark's perspective is definitely relative. I want you to remember that line. Mark's perspective is definitely relative, and you already knew this, so why persist? Begin to prepare now for Mark's literal physical death by undergoing the virtual death of Mark inherent in adopting the absolute point of view. All right, I am going to open up a spreadsheet because he's talking about the functionality of spreadsheets. So let me open up Excel here. And I am going to just type a number here, type a couple numbers here. Okay, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to put in a very simple formula. My formula is going to be equals C4, because notice this 5,764 is in column C, and it's on line 4. When I type in equals C4 and hit enter, it actually copies that number out of that cell for me, because that's what I've just told it to do with the formula. Now, if you look up here, and this is called the formula bar, you see the formula equals C4. Here you see the result of the formula. Right over here, I can grab a hold of the handle, and I can copy the formula down. But notice as I copy it down, I don't keep getting 5,764. It's not continuing to point at C4. Here it points at C4, but when I copied it down, it points to C5, which is this. Copy it down, it points to C6, which is this. Copy it down, it points to C7. This is called a relative formula. And what a relative formula does is it changes as you copy it. All right? Now let me show you an absolute formula. I'm going to do equals, but in Excel, when you want to make it absolute, you put a dollar sign. So dollar sign C means keep it always C, no matter where I copy it. Dollar sign 4 means keep it always 4, no matter where I copy it. That is still C4, but it's now absolute. When I hit enter, since it's still C4, I still get 5,764. It's giving me that number. But watch what happens when I copy it this time. It stayed C4 as I copied it because I made it absolute. You see that? So here it was a relative formula and it changed. As I copied down, it changed the number from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7. Here it's an absolute formula, so it stayed the same. So what this means is the relative is changing. The absolute is non-changing. And this is what he figured out from just doing spreadsheet stuff. Now, remember that sentence that I told you to remember. Mark's perspective is definitely relative. What does that mean?
He doesn't have a dollar sign.
Yeah, but tell me what that means. What's another word for relative?
Based always on what you're changing.
Personal.
Always changing. Always changing. Yeah. Mark's perspective is definitely relative. Always changing. And we could put any of our names in there, right? Regina's perspective is definitely relative. So if you know that your perspective is relative, why take yourself so seriously as if you're absolute? Think about that for a minute. Your opinion's going to change. Your point of view is going to change. How you feel is going to change. The problem of the day is going to change. Why take yourself so seriously as if it's absolute? And then, of course, instead of taking the relative so seriously, since you know it's going to change, when you notice the relative point of view or opinion or fear or desire or whatever it is, why not in that moment just shift your attention to what is absolute? You know, again, the quote says, of what use is the relative view to you? You're able to look from the absolute point of view. Why go back to the relative? Are you afraid of the absolute? And what would you say the absolute point of view is?
Unchanging truth.
Unchanging truth. And what's the point of view of unchanging truth, though?
The whole, no, I guess.
He says the whole. What are you going to say, Don?
No death.
No so death. Those, no are, those are probably both true. I'll tell you what I was thinking about, though. I was thinking about something else. I was thinking about it just observes. It just watches, right? Where the relative point of view gets all caught up. The awareness just observes, just watches. So I just wanted to share that with you. I thought that was pretty cool how the inner wisdom brought spreadsheets into it. And I thought that would make a fun demonstration to help us really kind of form in our mind how relative is always changing, absolute is not. And again, if it's always changing, why take our relative point of view so seriously? Doesn't really make sense. So that takes us to 573 in the RDA journal. See, probably the fastest way to get to it be here. Let's see, quote 573 we've already read. This is one of the quotes about, the person is built on mere habit, memory prompted by desire, and you should inquire into that. Okay, 573 says, the idea I am a person is a sticky idea. As clarity and wisdom shine through, I am a person will want to identify with them and say, I am wise. Wisdom may pass through, but wisdom is not meant to be claimed. The idea of claiming wisdom is merely another disguise of I am person. So I think the reason I wanted to show you this is because many of you are really writing a lot of wonderful clarity. And I happen to know, as someone who's written a lot of clarity in my time, that one thing that starts to arise is the mind wanting to claim it. And the mind wanting to feel proud about it. And that is just another idea other than these memories and habits and desires. This is just another idea that shows up to keep you clinging to I am a person, right? So when this wisdom shows up, when this great clarity shows up, take it in without claiming it. You know, instead of saying I wrote, for example, say inner wisdom showed me. Right? Those types of things. And really stay very, very humble, because the more and more clear you become, the more and more the temptation to have pride about that. And in fact, we had another quote about that this week, right? About those who mistake the dawn for the noonday sun and then they have pride about their spiritual experience. Pride is definitely, the more and more clear you get, the more and more the ego will try and pin you down with pride. So just be aware of that and resolve to stay humble and to stay the student. Even if you end up being a great teacher, stay the student. Don't ever, the teaching is just something that happens through you. You are the student. Right? Any questions or comments on that?
Regina?
Yes.
I'm actually glad you brought that up because I have been feeling that, I've come up with a really good insight today and I don't get a comment. And I know someone probably read it, but no one made a comment. And it's like, well, my comments are good. And then I finally, and I said, well, you know what? So what? You know, I know what came through me, and it may not have affected someone else the same way that it did me. So I had to let that go. And I said, okay, as long as I'm getting it, I can't worry about what everyone else is getting.
Absolutely. Hey, that's really all that matters about your contemplation is that it's moving you forward.
Right. Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter if anybody else thinks anything of it at all. If it's moving you forward day by day by day, and you know within if it is, then that's perfect. I've been a, quote, teacher for several years now, and I accept that role, but I don't buy into that role. Even when I'm leading these retreats at the retreat house, I'm sitting there contemplating and going deeper myself. I am always, always, always the student. That's just, to me, that's just the best position to be in. And it doesn't mean you can't also teach if that's what you're called to do. One thing I would personally recommend is that you don't teach until you're asked to. Too many people want to become the teacher. Wait until you're invited to be the teacher. You know, what happened for me when I became the teacher was two different unrelated people who didn't even know they were both calling me called me in the same weekend and asked me to come to Boston in the month of August of that year and do a retreat. And so I ended up going and doing one on Saturday and one on Sunday. And then another phone call came and then another phone call came. And, you know, I just kept doing it. Wait until someone asks you. If you are meant to teach, you will be called. Don't worry. Don't be so quick to be the teacher. Be excited about being the student. Okay? And then once you are the teacher, you're not, you're the student. You guys all shook your head. That was pretty cool. I've never seen everybody shake their head like that at the same time before. That was pretty cool. Okay, so let's see what I had next. Oh, wait, what I have next is we're out of time. So you see all the stuff I didn't quite get to, but that's all right. I knew as I was collecting all of this that I wouldn't be able to do it all, but I wrote it all down anyway and thought we would get as far as we could get. So we did that. You guys are continuing to do a great job. I can tell what's going on in your contemplations. And again, I'm very, very happy with what's going on here. So just keep moving forward. Have fun and see what comes up. And I'll see you guys for Gentle Healing next week. All right? Thank you.